Welcome to Stories and Stanza. I'm happy to have you here. I'm a writer and I created this podcast to bring out real stories that make life as beautiful as poetry. I take you on a journey through the human experience, sharing stories and conversations to uplift your spirit. Whether you are a lover of literature, a writer, or someone who enjoys a good story, Stories and Stanza may be the place for you. This is another episode of the In Author's Chair segment, where we talk to writers about their work, motivation, and challenges. Please join me in welcoming Penny Bingham for today's episode. She is an emerging writer currently working on a hybrid memoir chronicling her 7 years as a carer for her husband, who lived with Lewy body dementia. Her book is called A Gift of Grace and hints at how love flourished in an experience so exquisitely painful. She talks about compassion, changing perceptions, and reducing stigma that surrounds dementia. Her book is due to be published by the end of this year. Hope you will like this episode. Thank you.
Hi, Penny. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining Stories and Stanza.
Good afternoon, Apro, and thank you for the opportunity.
I'm glad to have you here. And in this podcast, I try to get real-life stories and use that as a platform so that more and more people get to know about it and find their inspiration. And I'm really interested to talk to you today. So for our listeners, are you okay to give a brief introduction of yourself?
Oh, certainly. So my name is Penny Bingham. I live in northeastern Victoria, and I spent 7 years caring for my husband, who was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. At the time of his diagnosis, I knew nothing about dementia and I'd never heard of Lewy body dementia. So the first couple of years were very, very steep learning curve. And the first couple of years were extremely difficult in terms of adjusting. I was very despondent, despairing. But then there was some events that happened in 2015 that shifted my focus. And as a result, the title of my memoir in progress is A Gift of Grace.
Thank you for sharing the details. And I really admire your strength and courage to channel your experience into words, into this book that you are writing. So let us talk a little bit more about your inspiration. And you are a dementia advocate, and you are talking about patience. You're talking about compassion and caring. So I want to understand that. When did you decide to write about it, and what was your experience as you continued this journey?
That's a great question. I actually decided right from the beginning, from the time of diagnosis, I started keeping a journal, quite a detailed journal, which is the framework for the memoir. But I knew at the time that ultimately I was going to do something with that. I was going to write about it, not necessarily for financial or commercial gain, but as a cathartic experience, but also with the learning curve that I undertook. I joined groups. I became co-convener of a carer's support group and became very involved in dementia-focused activities locally, and I became aware of the fact that my experience and my growing knowledge had the potential to be able to support other people who found themselves in a similar situation.
Thank you for that. Did you tell your husband that you are writing this memoir?
No, I didn't. That's an interesting question. No, I never really discussed that with him, and neither did I discuss my journal with him. That was something that I kind of kept under the blanket.
You told me that how this illness changed your husband, and he was a vibrant person, and then he slowly, you know, gave in to the challenges of this disease. Are you comfortable talking about it?
Sure. So he was had an incredible capacity for logical, literal thinking. He could build anything. He built us, well, at the time of his diagnosis, he was building us our third house, and he had no formal qualifications as a builder. He just said to me one day, I'd like to build a house, and he did. He could fix anything. He could strip down the motor of a car and put it back together. He could immediately see a practical solution to a practical problem. And then in the process of building this house, it became, or it had already become apparent that there were some problems, but he was no longer able to undertake the tasks that had been second nature to him all his life. Suddenly he couldn't work out simple solutions. He couldn't, slate laying became a issue of major contention for us in the summer of 2015. He just could no longer see solutions, and he could no longer solve those practical problems.
You know, this reminds me of a personal experience. My grandfather on my mother's side, he was very similar to what you said about your husband. So my grandfather, I have very little memories of him, but he was a very entrepreneurial person. I mean, he set up his own business, and he took care of his family, and was very successful and all that. And gradually he fell into dementia, and he stopped recognizing people. And mm-hmm. back then I didn't understand what he was going through. I was 4 or 5 years old. I just don't have a lot of memories, but I hear from people that you're such an outgoing person, and how he fell into the sickness, and he gradually changed. So I can totally relate to what you must have gone through. I wanted to hear on that note, like, when your husband suffered, what was the reception, like, how people around him took his illness, his changes and everything?
Well, our situation was a little unusual in that we were living in Western Australia, and our daughter and her husband and young children were living in Victoria. And we'd made a decision that we would relocate to be close to the grandchildren. And we'd each had an elderly parent to care for, and they'd departed. So we had put our property in WA on the market. And at the time that it sold, I was working for a year in the Pilbara. And during, there was the sale of the property created stress for my husband. I'd gone to take up the role in the Pilbara, and he'd remained in close to Perth to deal with the property sale. And it was 6 weeks before I saw him again. And when I saw him, he'd gone from me not really thinking, not understanding, or not being aware that we had a problem to deal with, to, oh my Lord, there's something really serious going on. So the stress had exacerbated the condition. We spent the year in the Pilbara and then came to Victoria, where we really didn't know anyone. So I can't actually answer that question in terms of us not being close to people that we knew. Although that said, there were a couple of episodes before we left WA where family members, Fred became very withdrawn. He was quiet anyway, but he had become very withdrawn. And a couple of family members had said to me, "What's going on? Is Fred okay?" And I always responded with, "Oh yes, it's just one of his quiet phases." So perhaps others were beginning to notice some subtle changes before I was.
I understand. Can I request you to share something that you have written as a part of the book?
Absolutely. So this is, pardon me, I've gone croaky. This is an excerpt from the chapter on the day of his diagnosis. The waiting room was minimalist. A shaft of sunlight shone through an overhead window onto a pile of out-of-date magazines neatly stacked on a small table. A pot of balm stood in one corner, a box of children's toys in another. The orderliness of the room contrasted starkly with the turmoil in my head. We sat together, Fred and I, in tense silence, contemplating what the outcome of this consultation might be. For over a year, I'd been trying to dispel the unthinkable possibility that persistently vexed my psyche. Atypical Parkinsonism, the GP had suggested. Atypical? That couldn't be too bad. The neurologist emerged, tall, slim, graying, dignified, commanding confidence. I described Fred's symptoms: trembling, memory issues, shuffling gait. Along with a referral to the neurologist, the GP had scheduled a CT scan and blood tests. Both came back clear, an encouraging sign that my misgivings were ill-conceived. After a protracted interview akin to the Spanish Inquisition, the neurologist read a series of tests. Well, observations, really. Walk here, sit there, stand up, smell this, remember these words. "What do you think it is?" he asked me. I thought we were paying him to tell us. "Maybe some kind of dementia?" The word resonates as a betrayal. "I think it's more than that," he says. "More? How can it be more?" "I think it's Lewy body dementia," he says dispassionately. "It's on the Parkinson spectrum," he adds, with the empathy of a marauding lion. "What can we do?" The question tumbles out of the turmoil of the consciousness. "Nothing," he states with an authority that says, "This consultation has ended. Please pay your $360 to the receptionist on your way out." Questions swirl in my brain like clothes in a tumble dryer. How can this be when we're still relatively young? What of our retirement plans of caravanning adventures in the outback? Is this some sort of cruel hoax? What of the overseas travel we planned? Why didn't I see this coming? What of the new home we're still building? In a futile attempt at normality, we find a small cafe and order coffee. We sit at a table in the courtyard, but I'm indifferent to the profusion of surrounding greenery, and I'm sure the strategically placed artistic sculptures are mocking us. This is a day of mourning. Fred's words hover over us like the sword of Damocles, suspended by a thread. Ominous, menacing. The insipid sunlight filtering through the canopy of vines offers no warmth to ease the chill that envelops us. The daily routine of the throng of people moving around the busy precinct continues unchanged. Do they not know our lives have been upended? Do they not care? Nothing has changed, yet everything has. A day of mourning indeed.
That was very soulful and deep words, Penny. Thank you for sharing that in our discussion.
Thank you.
And you told me that you came from an academic writing background.
Yes.
And now you're writing something which is deeply personal and I think falls closer to literary writing. And I wanted to hear about your journey from one spectrum to the other.
It's been another steep learning curve. So Fred died in July 2020, and I began the work on the memoir probably late that year. And about that time, I saw on Facebook a post about a memoir, an online memoir writing program offered by Alison Waring in Canada. And she had just shifted her training sessions to online because of COVID. So I was one of her inaugural online students, and I've continued to work with her over the past 3 years. I joined writing groups. One of the groups came out of the Alison Waring program, and we continue to meet every month and share a piece of work and provide feedback. I also attended a retreat with Alison in Tuscany in 2022, and I bought many, many books on the subject of writing, of creative writing, because the shift is so very different. Academic writing is cut and dry. As long as you can string a decent sentence together and understand the structure of sentences and paragraphs and syntax and stuff, you're okay. But with creative writing, bringing in, you know, the writing through the senses, bringing the emotion in, creating scenes, they're challenges that I'm still grappling with.
Thank you for sharing the learning curve with us. You mentioned that, you know, you are a dementia advocate, and mm-hmm. you think that, you know, we need to talk about it. We need to mm-hmm. rethink our perceptions. And I want to hear your lessons in that space, like why it is important to speak up.
Oh, it's important because of the statistics. In an aging population, the incidence of dementia is increasing at an alarming rate. In Australia, there's a new diagnosis every 6 minutes. And in Australia, dementia is the second leading cause of death after heart disease. People don't understand this. I still have people asking me regularly, is dementia a terminal disease? And another question I get regularly is, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia, when Alzheimer's is just one of the many different forms of dementia? Just as with cancer, which is an umbrella term for a whole lot of different pathologies, so the term dementia is an umbrella term for a lot of different forms of the disease. So in 2015, I was invited to be on the steering committee of a pilot program for a dementia-friendly community in Northeast Victoria. And from that, I became co-convener of a carers support group, which is now in its almost completed 9 years of operation. Pardon me. When the neurologist answered nothing to my question about what could we do, I needed to find out. And a Google search took me to the University of Tasmania, where I enrolled in their Understanding Dementia MOOC, a brilliant, brilliant introductory program for anyone who needs to know about dementia. And from there, I enrolled in their Bachelor of Dementia program. So I'd formed a good, and I then went on to become an educator for Dementia Australia. So I'd formed a really good, solid knowledge base. And after my husband died, I just saw a need to continue to share what I'd learned. And because I live in a small regional community, I've got a bit of a public profile within this community, and people come to me, if they know anybody who's been diagnosed, they come and ask for my support and information and resources and assistance. And I see the work that I do as part of my husband's legacy.
That is so important. As we are recording this discussion, it is a respect that we are leaving for him, and also we are putting our voice out there. So you are not just in the local community, but I hope we can share this with anyone who might need to hear this voice.
Anybody who needs to hear the voice, yes, because we're all going to be impacted by it, be it a family member, a relative, a friend, a neighbour, a work colleague. We are all going to be touched by dementia in some way, shape or form, and we need to know how to respond. And I cast us back to May of last year when that dear lady was tasered in the care facility in Cooma. There is evidence of the fact that the wider community does not understand. The police officer involved in that should have had, well, you didn't need to be a Rhodes Scholar to know that his response was not the way to go. But even to have been able to speak to that poor lady with some compassion, that's where I hope my journey takes me, that to the point where people have that level of understanding of how to communicate and how to respond when they're confronted with someone with dementia.
Yes, I think the more people are aware of it, it kind of helps us build that compassion. Because Indeed. If we do not know, then we struggle. It is with the love we can provide a better care to our loved ones. And I am deeply touched by your story, and I'm talking to you, and flashes of my memories about my grandfather is coming back to me, and that how my mom says that he was such a dynamic person, and I remember him as someone who couldn't recognize people. So that was such a painful process, and I do not have anyone to document that. So I think it's honoring someone's memory as well as educating people about the effects of such a disease. Yeah, and you've done a fantastic job.
It's a devastating, hideous disease. Wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yes, and in this podcast there is I am working on the concept of emotional intelligence, where we build our resilience towards our failure, and we become compassionate with what we are doing. And I think your story adds such a strong candidate in that space. It fits with the narrative so well. And I thank you for coming, taking your time and talking to me about your writing journey as well as your struggles with the disease. So
thank you, Abra. Thank you for the opportunity to have a platform to be able to spread the word. If my story can help one other person or one other family, then it's been worthwhile.
Yeah, yes, definitely. So when do you plan to publish your book?
I'm editing I'd like to think I've got it finished by the end of this year, but I don't know. I'm still very new to, and I'm still very new to the whole process.
Are you planning to self-publish, or are you planning to reach out to a publisher?
I don't know. I need to learn more about those two options.
Right.
Traditional publishing, I can see great benefits in, but also my understanding is that it's protracted, and, you know, that could be a couple of years before the book was out.
Yes.
So maybe to expedite, maybe self-publishing is the way to go, but
yeah,
that's a conversation for another day.
Yes, I'll be happy to help with anything that you might need. You have my coordinates, so I'm a registered self-publisher in Australia.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I wrote a book which is I write mainly poetry, and my manuscript was sitting there in a shelf for 3 years, and then a writer from Melbourne so looked at it and said that I think there's merit to publishing this, and then she guided me with all the steps required for becoming a publisher, and I followed that step, and now I have published two books, and I'm every day I'm you know working towards expressing my words into poetry, and a lot of that is with coming back, overcoming our challenges. So yeah, your story deeply resonates with me, and more so because of the personal connection that I made.
And that's the thing my target audience is going to be people who have lived experience with dementia.
Yes. We are towards the end of our discussion. Is there anything else you would like to share with our audience?
Thank you so much for hearing my story. I really appreciate it.
You just listened to Penny Bingham talk about her book, A Gift of Grace. I hope you liked the episode. See you in the next one. Thank you.